Hello, and welcome to episode number 25 of the Point of Convergence podcast. As always, I'm your host, Exoacademian. For anyone who spent any degree of time and energy researching the collective enigma known as the UFO phenomenon, one thing is clear. This topic is as elusive, almost absurdly so, as it is obsessively fascinating. Not only do the manifestations of these phenomena in and of themselves tantalize, mesmerize, and bewilder anyone who's paying close attention to the bizarre array of feats performed by the apparently non-humanly crafted aerial vehicles coined UFOs or UAP, but the way the intelligences behind this phenomenon are able to manipulate human perception and or experience only further complicates this already murky, if astonishing and invigorating, subject matter. Regardless of how someone enters this conversation, whether that be as a result of a nuts and bolts interest in next-gen technology and or an interaction with an intelligent, non-human biological species, or via a profoundly spiritual personal encounter with entities that are perceived as so superior and otherworldly that an expression like celestial being seems more appropriate than a blunt and crude term like alien, this subject matter quickly expands into a wide-ranging and profound mystery, one that inevitably leads to questions about the very nature of reality itself. With decades of data now behind us, there have been no shortage of hypotheses put forth to explain the nature, meaning, and origin of this phenomenon. Of course, sometimes a particular hypothesis put forward will say as much about the worldview of the group proposing it as it does the nature of the encounters themselves. And this is, of course, because regardless of how discombobulating these experiences can be for witnesses and or contactees slash abductees, at the end of the day, as with anything, we have to try to make sense of them by slotting them into preordained possibilities dictated by our reality paradigm. Even when a researcher tries to focus on a singular aspect of the data, an honest, thorough assessment of reports will often quickly lead the inquiry into another area altogether. And that often creates understandable confusion. For instance, oftentimes these events are so complex that one is left wondering if the psychological aspect somehow manifests the apparent physicality or vice versa. By way of example, when physical phenomena are observed that supposedly violate our very notions of physics, of how we assume the world works, we're left wondering, does this mean our perception is being played with somehow? Or that our very understanding of reality is being exposed as woefully incomplete, if not almost wholly misguided? As mentioned already, over the last several decades, a wide variety of hypotheses have been advanced to try to make sense of the UFO phenomenon. So many possible explanations have emerged, in fact, that any attempt to keep track of the plethora of proposed explanations can in itself be dizzying. That said, one way one can organize these various hypotheses into a digestible and comprehensible whole is to view them from three different high-altitude perspectives: the psychic, the physical, and the transphysical. And that's exactly the approach we'll employ to make sense of this enigmatic topic in this, the 25th episode of the Point of Convergence podcast. Part of what makes studying the UFO phenomenon so challenging is that it's not exactly something you can recreate in a lab scenario to make sure that your hypothesis holds its weight. No, different researchers will examine different kinds of evidence, different bodies of evidence, and there isn't even an agreed-upon assessment of what should count as evidence. And so therefore, it's not surprising that we end up with different hypotheses because different researchers are looking at different bodies of data. And of course, that's only one of the challenges. Another challenge is that we just don't know how many players there are within the UFO phenomenon. As I've mentioned numerous times before, while we refer to it as a phenomenon, singular, it's almost certainly a collection of phenomena, perhaps by multiple actors. And different hypotheses could apply to different actors. And perhaps where we're going wrong is that we're trying too often to slot it into one category. Perhaps that's an ill-advised way to approach this. Another issue is that, of course, the worldviews of the researchers themselves bleed into the data. They bleed into the process by which researchers even consider something as possible. And when you exclude certain phenomena from the get-go, you're going to end up skewing the data. And that happens time and time again because of the worldview bias on behalf of some of the researchers. And the truth is, even if you have an open mind and you're willing to consider almost every hypothesis in the book, even ones that expand or completely collapse our former view of reality, you're still left with very confusing, confounding data. And that may be part of the challenge that the government is running into in terms of trying to make sense of this. They're not even sure what laws to apply to it, for instance. Now, Dr. Eric Davis is a scientist who advises the U.S. government. He was involved in ATIP, the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, headed by Lou Elizondo, and he was also part of the Advanced Weapons Special Application Program, as well as other programs run by the government. He knows as much as anyone when it comes to privileged classified information pertaining to the UFO/UAP subject. And according to Dr. Davis, quote, there is a lot of evidence that the government has known, but the problem is it's so outside the realm of human comprehension that they can't deal with it on a legislative basis. They can't deal with it on a military operational basis. They can't deal with it on the basis of presidential policy, unquote. As I mentioned in the introduction, today we're going to look at the UFO phenomenon from three high-altitude perspectives, the psychic, the physical, and the transphysical. And this can be helpful because sometimes if you have a preferred hypothesis and you're always drilling down and trying to fit the data within that hypothesis, you can actually lose your way. Sometimes you can become biased because you're so committed to that hypothesis. We're all guilty of that, or at least potentially. So it's always good to question your questions and periodically step back and look at the entire thing from a different perspective. And again, as I said, today we're going to look at a variety of hypotheses, but within this lens of physical, transphysical, and psychical. Now, this term psychic or psychical, we're using in the way that Jacques Vallée has used it. And for Vallée, it referred to the relationship between physical reality and human awareness. Now, the reason why Vallée was so focused on this psychical aspect is because when he would interview different witnesses, different contactees, he would find that it was such a profound and transformative experience for the individual that it sometimes is difficult to tell if the change was primarily happening inside their consciousness or in the reality out there. In other words, is this phenomena manifesting in the real world that another observer could see it as well? Or is it only happening within the consciousness, the perception of a particular individual? There definitely seems to be cases where it can manifest just inside the consciousness of one individual. And in fact, two different people can have two different experiences of the same event. And this is why the psychic aspect is so key for Vallée and others. And of course, Vallée also talked about his control system hypothesis, for which I dedicated an entire podcast episode to. The idea there is that whatever is behind the phenomenon, or this aspect of the phenomenon, may be trying to change our culture, change our civilization, which of course is a collection of cultures. And it does this incrementally over time by adjusting boundaries of a control system. This could be an intelligence, a group of entities, or even a vast AI system. There's different ways it could work. But the idea is this works incrementally and subversively on the level of the collective subconscious of humankind. And in that sense, it's very difficult to track and to understand even as it's happening. But the result is still inevitable. It helps manage human evolution. This is a key aspect of the psychic aspect that Valet refers to. Now, of course, anyone who studied this for any amount of time also knows there are definitely physical aspects to this phenomenon too. It's not an either-or, it's definitely a both-and. Physical aspects include things like radar returns and even markings in the ground, burnt markings in the ground, or indentations where a craft has landed. People have markings on their body. Implants have even been removed from people. So there's a variety of ways that this definitely seems to show up in ways that suggest it's manifesting in our reality as physical objects that can be measured by instruments, not just by human consciousness. And of course, what's even more interesting and perplexing is that often both psychic and physical effects are observed in the same event. Recently, I did an entire podcast on the events at Fatima. And of course, that's a prime example of where the effects were noticed in the consciousness of the individuals, and that different individuals would have different experiences, even different messages. They even saw different things in terms of what they reported afterwards. But there were also physical aspects that manifested as well that were observed by people even 10 miles away. This includes light phenomenon, atmospheric phenomena, temperature effects. All of these things were noticed by a broad assortment of people, even very far away. Remember, up to 70,000 people witnessed the penultimate event at Fatima. Also, let us not forget, as I mentioned in that podcast episode on Fatima, what's intriguing is even though 70,000 people saw something, even up to 10 miles away, and we're talking major things were observed. The atmosphere changed drastically. The sun dimmed to the point where stars and the moon were observed in the background. And yet, astronomical observatories did not pick up anything. In other words, if you weren't in that region, if you were looking at the data returns from observatories from well beyond that region, nothing was seen. There was nothing in instrumentation to say that something, quote unquote, really happened. And yet 70,000 people will tell you otherwise. So what does that suggest? It suggests that this phenomenon is somehow able to manipulate the consciousness of perhaps tens of thousands of people. Because what are we left with if we know that our instruments are not picking this up? We assume that it's not really manifesting in physical reality the way that we really think physical reality is supposed to work. Which again makes us question, when you really look into this, is our notion of reality incomplete? And that's a perfect example to lead us into the third category, the third lens through which we're looking at this phenomenon, the transphysical. Here we're talking about the fact that sometimes, even though these things are observed in physical reality, it seems to be a kind of physical reality that violates our notion of how physics is supposed to work, even our cutting-edge notion of physics. Here we're talking about things like objects that start as one, break up into multiple objects, and then seamlessly come back together. Or objects that change shape, vastly change shape. Or when contactees / abductees report noticing a craft that's a certain size when they see it outside, but once they're inside, it seems much, much larger. And sometimes the entire structure inside seems completely different than what they saw on the outside. Or sometimes, again, this is where it crosses over into, is it physical or is it psychical? Different contactees will even notice completely different shapes on the outside, but then the same shape once they're inside. And once they're inside, they can also recognize each other. So this is the transphysical aspect, where it seems to be happening in physical reality, but in a way that violates our notion of how physical reality is supposed to work. And of course, within this transphysical lens, we're also thinking of interdimensional aspects. Here we're talking about both entities and craft that seemingly pop into existence within our reality. Like a window opens and suddenly they're there where they weren't a second ago. And just as easily, they can vanish. And this suggests that they are indeed manifesting in our reality, but they are perhaps coming in instantaneously from a portal of some sort, from a different dimension, perhaps a mirror universe or an alternate Earth, but it doesn't seem like distance or travel is involved. So again, you have this complication of it's manifesting in physical reality, but manifesting in a way we can't make sense of based on our current understanding of how physics works. So far we've discussed different ways that this phenomenon manifests in ways that are so perplexing that we can't really wrap our minds around it based on our current notions of reality. Now, sometimes, in fact, oftentimes when it comes to science, if you find you keep banging your head against a wall because some data just won't fit within a hypothesis, this often is a sure sign that your hypothesis is wrong, or perhaps the assumptions that you bring to your hypothesis, because almost every hypothesis begins with some givens, some assumptions about the nature of reality. And if the data refuses to fit in total, then that might be telling you something about either your hypothesis being wrong or the assumptions you bring to the hypothesis. And here we think of John Mack and how he rejected these dualistic notions that we bring to the table when we try and form hypotheses about the UFO phenomenon. This is what John Mack said, quote, "I object to the either-or-ness of this. Why couldn't aliens be real and not real at the same time, inhabiting some liminal zone? Modern physics was replete with contradictions, as in quantum superposition, where chunks of matter could occupy two different places at the same time. In any case," he said, "the phenomenon could not be explained psychiatrically. The people with whom I have been working, as far as I can tell, are telling the truth," unquote. And by the way, that quote was from Ralph Blumenthal's excellent biography of Dr. John Mack called The Believer. And I did a review of that book in episode number 11 of the Point of Convergence podcast. Okay, so at this point, I think I've set the table sufficiently in terms of discussing how the data regarding the UFO phenomenon can be seen from these different lenses, the psychic, the physical, and the transphysical. Keep that in mind as we now look at each of the main hypotheses put forward to address the UFO phenomenon. So let's begin with the prosaic explanations. These are the explanations that I long ago dismissed because they definitely don't take into account the fullness of the data in any way whatsoever. But prosaic explanations would be something of human origin or otherwise mundane explanations. Could be a military exercise, could be atmospheric conditions that are noticed. Of course, some people have mentioned birds. These are prosaic explanations put forward to make sense of the UFO phenomenon. That's number one, prosaic. Next, let's take a look at hypotheses that you could group within the physical nuts and bolts category. These are consisting of material objects or creatures. So we've discussed the extraterrestrial hypothesis, of course, many times on this podcast. That would fit within the physical category because these are actual beings within our physical universe that are traveling vast distances in spacecraft, presumably, to interact with us. Everything about that explanation is physical and fits within our physical universe and our current understanding of physics. The cryptoterrestrial hypothesis, which we've also discussed on this podcast, in fact, there was one entire episode dedicated to it, also fits within this physical nuts and bolts kind of category, because this is a sister humanoid species living again in our physical reality, within our physical universe, in fact, living here on the Earth, albeit in stealthy ways. So both of those fit within the physical category, nuts and bolts, so to speak. Next up are a series of hypotheses you could group within the mental category. In other words, produced by the mind's function or its dysfunction. Now, one kind of mental explanation would be remotely induced. This could be things like psychotronic weapons, where energy weapons are directed at people's minds and it makes them see things or experience aspects of reality that are not, quote unquote, really there. Hypnosis could be another kind of mental control that makes people experience these kinds of things. Telepathy is another kind. Of course, disinformation campaigns where people read things and it changes their view of reality and makes them then end up perceiving things, presumably, that they wouldn't otherwise. This is all fitting within the mental category. Also within this mental category are neurological problems like medical conditions. This would also fit within a mental explanation. We also have psychosocial elements would also fit within this mental category. So for instance, religions that are formed around UFOs or UAP would also fit within this. Again, it's all about the mind projecting ideas that determine people's views. As we continue our quick trip around the full spectrum of hypotheses put forward to explain the origins of UFOs or UAP, next up we have the interdimensional category. And as I've talked about on different podcasts, this can cover a variety of hypotheses and it's postulated different ways by different people. Of course, a parallel universe would fit within this interdimensional hypothesis, and Jacques Vallée's Passport to Magonia would be a good book to look into to learn more about that. The idea is that these beings, these intelligences, are traveling to or interacting with our universe from an external position, in other words, from outside of our physical universe. Time travel would also fit within this interdimensional category. A colliding universe, which was discussed in Whitley Strieber's A New World, would also fit here, as would notions of hyperspace. So as you're probably noticing, we're stepping it up a couple notches with each of these categories. We began with the most simple, the prosaic explanation, suggesting that nothing at all unusual is really happening. It's just meteorological effects or foreign adversaries, aircraft, things like that. Then we move to the physical nuts and bolts, which is more complicated and obviously involves things like ETs or crypto-terrestrials, but it still involves our physical universe and doesn't diverge from any of our known understandings of physics. We also considered the mental aspect, which steps it up a notch because it might involve things like psychotronic weapons or neurological disorders or even complex psychosocial elements tied to religion and things like that. Then we move to the interdimensional category, and that really upped the ante to discussing things like parallel universes, time travel. By the way, I did an entire podcast episode on the possibility that perhaps the beings visiting us, or at least some of them, are us from the future, but perhaps with a genome spliced with other biological life forms from Earth. Again, colliding universe, hyperspace, all fits within the interdimensional category. We've got one more left. That's the extra-dimensional category. Now, to be clear, with the ultra-terrestrial category, that involved various hypotheses that had to do with the manipulation of space-time using methods beyond our current scientific understanding. The extra-dimensional category is about having a fundamentally different relationship to space-time altogether. And this groups together a variety of hypotheses, everything from the simulation hypothesis, which takes it up an entire different league, because here we're talking about reality itself being not what we think it is. By the way, for those of you interested in this simulation hypothesis, I would point you to episodes number 12 and 18, if you haven't heard them already, where we discuss that from a couple different angles. And in the future, by the way, we're going to do a podcast episode dedicated to Michael Talbot's excellent book, The Holographic Universe. Now, also within this extra-dimensional category would be the beings of light or the celestial beings that people often refer to. This is somewhat of a subset of the UFO phenomenon. Some people might not even consider it part of the same category, really, not really a UFO experience. But really, it does all fit together. And it's complicated because often people's worldview will determine how they describe these things. So someone with a religious background, particularly Christianity, is going to describe these things literally as angels and in some cases, demons, because that's what makes sense to them based on how they think about reality, how they've been taught about reality. But even people who aren't particularly religious will describe these entities as beings of light, as very much not physical beings in any sense, that they don't have a relationship with our physical reality. And in that sense, they often think of them as creator kind of beings that are coming into this universe from some external position that really is outside space-time altogether. Now, beyond the main categories we've already discussed and the various hypotheses that fall within those different categories, there are some even more out there ideas that really stretch things even more. Ideas like tulpas. Here the idea is that human beings are actually somehow manifesting these realities, that they are real, that they have a physical reality. They are actually manifesting in measurable ways in our reality, but it's still a projection that's ultimately finds its root in human consciousness. Now, you might think this sounds bizarre and unlikely, but there have been some amazing cases where groups have got together, imagined a certain character, projected this, and then started getting responses in things like a seance to suggest that this being that they imagined together has taken on some sort of reality. Bizarre and yet documented as true. Another possibility is that this is a manifestation of our collective unconscious or of the life force itself, that the life force, whatever you consider that to be, manifests certain realities at certain points in our evolutionary history to help move us to the next level. Now, as I mentioned in the introduction, when you look into this phenomenon for any amount of time with any amount of committed energy, it inevitably leads to some very perplexing but fascinating questions about ultimate reality itself. It's almost impossible to not end up there when you really look at the data. The truth is, from what we can see, not just in the UFO phenomenon, but even in psychic research that's been done in parapsychological circles, it seems to be the case that reality is amorphous and really nebulous in nature. And right now, even though some won't admit it, there are some crises going on within various scientific endeavors. This is true certainly in the behavioral sciences, in the physical sciences, the biological sciences, where they are coming across data, much like what happened with physics with the double slit experiment and the quantum world, where former notions are being thrown out the door, so to speak. And by the way, speaking of that, as the reality of the UFO phenomenon hits home, both in the public and in our academic circles, in our government circles and whatnot, as is happening now, almost daily, there are stories coming out now in mainstream media. This seems to be finally hitting home for millions of people and soon will be billions of people. As that begins to hit home, you're going to see some major wrestling going on in society because, as I just pointed out, the reality of this phenomenon inevitably leads to some very complex, perplexing questions about reality itself. And you're going to have all of that happening at the same time. Now, you might not see it happening all at the same time. You might see it happen step by step by step, because it's going to take people some time to catch up with this data and process it. Remember, a lot of us that are obsessed with this topic have been, you know, digesting this data for years. But this is now hitting the general society, and that's going to be very interesting to watch. Now, speaking of that, some people are frustrated and even disappointed. Some are even disturbed by the fact that we don't have a solid, polished perspective on the nature of reality itself, let alone on the nature of these apparently non-human intelligences already in our midst and interacting with us. Now, I don't take that view. Because as I've said before, I believe this journey is as much an adventure to be embarked upon with the enthusiasm and wonder of a child as it is a problem to be solved. And on that note, we've come to the close of another edition of the Point of Convergence podcast. As always, let's keep this conversation going and growing. But until next time, friends, from deep within the Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina, this is Exoacademian, signing out.